Blog Talk Radio.
...of KJMA's practice of constructive community reporting, we have invited Dr. Khalid Mohammed, Minister and Supreme Captain of Minister Louis Farrakhan and the elite fruit of Islam, to help us to put today's events into perspective. Dr. Mohammed.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. The Honorable Elijah Mohammed and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan teach us that no matter how bad the condition looks that the black man and black woman is in, no matter how much self-destruction, no matter how much destructive behavior and conduct we see on the part of the black man and black woman, no matter how low the black man and black woman has fallen, the black man is the original man, God's people.
Could you help us to understand the kind of forces that create a Frank Williams?
When we look at a Roberta, a Frank Williams, and the many Frank Williams across the nation of America and the black nation in general, when we look at a Frank Williams, we see one who is other than self. And when we see him doing evil, we see him doing evil which is learned behavior, learned and picked up from the very devil himself over the past 400 years. I guess, Roberta, we could say the devil made him do it.
I would like to make a few comments concerning the difference between the black revolution and the Negro revolution. There's a difference. When you study the historic nature of revolutions, the motive of a revolution, the objective of a revolution, and the result of a revolution, and the methods used in a revolution, you may change words. You may devise another program. You may change your goal and you may change your mind. Look at the American Revolution in 1776. That revolution was for what? For land. How was it? Why did they want land? Independence. How was it carried out? Bloodshed.
Yes, that's right.
Number one, it was based on land, the basis of independence. And the only way they could get it was bloodshed. The French Revolution, what was it based on? The landless against the landlord. What was it for? Land. How did they get it? Bloodshed. Was no love lost. Was no compromise. Was no negotiation. I'm telling you, you don't know what our revolution is. Because when you find out what it is, you'll get back in the alley. You'll get out of the way. The Russian Revolution. What was it based on? Land. The landless against the landlord. How did they bring it about? Bloodshed. You haven't got a revolution that doesn't involve bloodshed. And you're afraid to bleed. I said you're afraid to bleed. Long as the white man sent you to Korea, you bled. He sent you to Germany, you bled. He sent you to the South Pacific to fight the Japanese, you bled. You bleed for white people. But when it comes time to seeing your own churches being bombed and little black girls murdered, you haven't got no blood. So I cite these various revolutions, brothers and sisters, to show you, you don't have a peaceful revolution. You don't have a turn the other cheek revolution. There's no such thing as a nonviolent revolution. Only kind of revolution that's nonviolent is the Negro Revolution. The only revolution based on loving your enemy is the Negro Revolution. The only revolution in which the goal is a desegregated lunch counter, a desegregated theater, a desegregated park, and a desegregated public toilet. You can sit down next to white folks on the toilet. That's no revolution. Revolution is based on land. Land is the basis of all independence. Land is the basis of freedom, justice, and equality. The white man knows what a revolution is. How do you think he'll react to you when you learn what a real revolution is? You don't know what a revolution is. If you did, you wouldn't use that word. A revolution is bloody. Revolution is hostile. Revolution knows no compromise. Revolution overturns and destroys everything that gets in its way.
Black power, black power, and black power. More power to my people. It's your brother, your soldier in arms, comrade in battle, Sean Saddam Kweli. And I'm happy to be able to broadcast live once again to you from right here in the hails and smells of North America. As always, I count this a privilege. I count this a joy. I count this an esteemed honor to be able to talk to you, my sisters, my brothers, and some others from this bold revolutionary radio broadcast we know of as Black Power Radio. And we come to you every Monday night, determined to give you the truth, unmixed, undiluted, untampered with in any form. And tonight will be no different. We open up this show, as we do all shows, giving thanks to the God of our forefathers and foremothers, who answers to many different names. And we bear witness, regardless to land, label, or language, that there is but one God. And we give thanks to the Almighty God for creation and life itself, giving thanks to our ancestors, the original people, what they call the aboriginal people of the planet, who are the first government on the planet, the first rulership on the planet, the first lawgivers on the planet. Our people were the first at it, the first to walk in the light of the bright sun. And we give thanks to them, thanks to the kingdoms that were built, the rulerships that existed, the education and knowledge that was spread throughout the globe, not just through Africa. I want to be clear, brothers and sisters, throughout the globe. We are thankful for that information and inspiration. We also give thanks to those who, when our people had to, as we're taught, had to fulfill the prophecy of being captured and taken into a strange land amongst a strange people. We are thankful that our people were able to, as we always have done, produce freedom fighters and produce warriors who would work to liberate us from that circumstance. And as always the case, whenever our people fall into a bondage-type situation, they are always liberators, always those who come to unleash the shackles. There's always those who rise up to break the chains and not only free your behinds, but free your minds. And so we give thanks to all of our freedom fighters, male and female, all of our great inventors, all of our great scholars, all of our great thinkers and the great geniuses who have advanced us to this far. We give thanks to those who are struggling today. And when I say struggling, I don't mean necessarily economic alone. I don't mean socially alone. I mean revolutionarily. Those who are struggling today, those who are still awake and have not been put to sleep by the sleeper, those that have not been lulled to sleep by today's circumstance of inclusion or illusion of inclusion. I'm thankful for those who are on the front lines. We give thanks for all the great formations that come before us, giving thanks to the great, great UNIA with the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. And we give thanks to the great Noble Drew Ali and the Moore Science Temple of America. We give thanks to the great Robert F. Williams and the Deacons for Defense, to the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his students for the Nation of Islam. Of course, on this 19th, on this 19th day, you know we have to give thanks for a bold black man who you heard in the beginning of the intro, and that's why I just had to, we had to let that bad boy roll, because we celebrate his born day today. That great firebrand of black nationalism, that great man who was committed to the cause of Islam and was to make sure in his day that there was no confusion about what it meant, like today's time. We're thankful to that great inspiration who inspired the greats like the Black Panthers of yesterday from 1966 and inspired many other movements. We want to say happy born day, and we give thanks for the life of Minister Malcolm X, former national spokesman to the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that organizer of Muslim Mosque Incorporated and the OAAU, Organization of African American Unity. We give thanks for him on his birthday, or born day, May the 19th. We're thankful to those who were inspired by him and continue to struggle as we are inspired today. Thanks to the Black Liberation Army and those who liberated Sister Queen Warrior Sada Shakur and fought for our liberation with an armed position. And we give thanks for those who have helped us to this far. We also want to thank our beginnings in Dallas, Texas, and Brother Aaron Michaels, the founder of the organization. We give thanks to those who helped him in the early days, the OG Panther, Michael McGee, the alderman, who helped in the early days. We give thanks to that great, great, bold, bald-headed black man who, we told you, is 100% black man, unrelenting with the enemy, unflinching with the enemy, who told you his purpose on the planet was to give our enemies hail from the cradle to the grave, who told you and taught you that you know, there is no spook under the ground that you got to worry about, but there's a live, grafted individual, white man and woman, who is on the ground, who's giving you trouble all the days that you've been on top of the ground. We're talking about a black man who was called the truth terrorist. I'm not talking about that fake stuff out there, that stuff set up by the agencies like CIA and NSA, that fake orchestrated terrorism like Boko Haram and all of that. I'm talking about a truth terrorist, a black man who terrorized the oppressor and terrorized bootlicking, buck dancing Negroes with the truth all the day and all the night. A man who's lived on his post and, of course, transitioned on his post. He was former national assistant in the Nation of Islam, former national spokesman in the Nation of Islam, former supreme captain in the Nation of Islam, lieutenant in the army of Idi Amin Dada in the mid-70s, a thinker out of Dillard University in Pepperdine, accelerated learning class, high school football quarterback, or farming football quarterback, and all kind of stuff that he has as accolades. I'm talking about the Black Power General, our standard bearer in the new Black Panther Party, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. We give thanks for him and his students, which we are thankful to. Another black man who we affectionately call the Attorney General, known also as the Attorney at War, who passed his bar exam on the first time, the first go-around, who picked up the torch after the physical transition of Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. And he carried that burden and carried the flame of being national chairman for 12 years and spread this organization around the world, taking it all the way into the mother continent of Africa and setting up all in France and setting up in other parts internationally, producing the National Central Committee that was previously unpresent in the new Black Panther Party. And going on the ground, face to face and nose to nose with the enemy in Katrina and in other situations all the time, frontline soldier, talking about Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, and give thanks for our bold, bald-headed black man that's on the scene today, coming out of that root foundation of Dallas, Texas, with that metropolitan African-American think tank called MIAT, with Dr. Sims and others who you've heard, a very, very studied and astute brother who is sincere about the liberation and salvation of our people, but he's also a family man, a man that is concerned about the black family and concerned about the black child and concerned about the well-being of the black nation. He's also a brother who is concerned about nation building, as he is a true-to-heart Pan-Africanist and a true-to-heart black nationalist. And he is interested in institutions. Try saying that three times and four times fast. He's interested in building institutions, as he has established the first ever national headquarters of the new Black Panther Party, talking about buildings, upcoming liberation schools and upcoming restaurants and upcoming manufacturing centers that is being worked on as we're talking. I'm talking about that great general, that great professor general, and our national chairman of the new Black Panther Party, talking about Minister Hashim Nzinga. We greet you with peace, brothers and sisters, whether you say Assalamu Alaikum or Hotep, Shalom, Shalom. If you in the 5%, the nation of gods and earth, we say peace to the gods and peace to the earth. If you just a brother and sister straight up off of the streets, peace to you and what's up? We're here, brothers and sisters, live in the flesh, Monday night, right black at you. And as we say, once again, it's on. And there's been a lot that has happened since we last talked with you. And I want to be clear, this is going to be one of those you got to buckle your safety belt for, because we must talk about surviving, number one. But we also must talk about saving our children, saving the black child, and saving yourself. Because if you can't save your child, you for damn sure ain't really interested in saving yourself. The children, as the old song used to say, are the future. We believe that the children are the future. We know that our children are our future. But if you look around the nation, I'm talking about the United Snakes of America, if you look around it, you see clearly that the black child, the black mind, the black man, the black woman is under assault wherever you look. And so we're being assaulted from all quarters, all sections, being assaulted, being attacked, and being bombarded. And so we'll have our sister on with us, Sister Angela, Lady Shabazz Freeman. She'll be on with us. Sister Lady Shabazz will be on with us, and she is a strong warrior queen, a strong sister who is dedicated to the liberation and salvation of the black nation. And she has, with her own creative genius and by the grace of the God, produced and published books that we must have. Now, I know that the moment many of our people who are dead hear the term book, something shuts off in your mind, because most of us have been taught not to read. So what this sister has done is she has put books in a children's form, and also has books with plenty of pictures for you lazy ones that don't want to read. And she's going to get you right on in there with the hook and get you right in the book and make you read. Because we got to be some readers. In her bio, it says that she is a unique author that is dedicated to the advancement of the black community. Her first book was God's Gift, How to Be a Good Black Man, a good black woman to a strong black man. Has helped thousands of black women create peace in their relationships by embracing true black womanhood. We're going to talk to her about that. According to Sister Angela, says real strong black women strive to keep their families intact and happy. She recently added the book's Conscious Entertaining, The Return of the Domestic Goddess, and the Black Books for Black Children series to her resume. She's working on several more books to be released later in 2014. She began her career as a freelance writer, providing editorials for various black publications. She later became a blogger and a popular radio talk show host. Her time is now spent writing books and advising black people on family, health, and healing. She also works in the community as an advocate for survivors of sexual assault and children in the foster care system. Her passion is creating a more centered, productive black community, one family at a time. Despite her many roles, she says, the one that gives her the most fulfillment is being a devoted wife. Angela has been happily married for 8 years to her best friend, partner, and compliment. She draws upon her real life experiences in dating and marriage to create solid common sense advice that teaches women how to create peaceful homes and happy families. And she believes that there can never be a strong black community until we create stable black families. And she says the time for change is now. And we most certainly, certainly, certainly agree with our sister. And let me see if she's on with us here at area code 661-748. Sister Angela, is that you?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well. How are you, sister?
Peace. I'm fine. How are you?
Peace. I'm doing great. I'm doing great by the grace of God. So glad to have you on. I'm thankful that you made it on with us, and this is one that I personally wouldn't miss. Glad you're on. What's going on? Talk to us a little bit. We want to first give you the opportunity to first introduce yourself. I know that I read some of your bio, but I know bios only give you a short synopsis. So if you could, please, just tell us who Sister Angela Lady Shabazz Freeman is.
Wow. Well, the bio pretty much said it. I'm just an ordinary person like anybody else. I just have a bit of a talent for writing. I started off, as you said, writing God's Gift, which was great. And when that book came out, I had lots of interviews. There was, you know, lots of positive energy surrounding it. And then I started doing Black Books for Black Children. And all of a sudden, I think because of my method of writing and some of the subject matter, the language, the imagery, all of a sudden people were afraid to interview me. So I definitely thank you for giving me the opportunity to come here and speak to your audience. I think this is probably only my third interview of the year because something about those Black Books for Black Children just scares people. And so that's pretty much where I've been coming from lately, just really trying to produce products that are very unique, very specific to Black people, and unfortunately that alienates a lot of people. Well, I should say fortunately. It's not really that unfortunate.
You know, we certainly understand in the New Black Panther Party about being castigated or alienated or kept out because of strong stances, but we certainly want to give you a salute, a Black Power salute fist for that, because as Dr. Khalid Muhammad used to teach us, somebody got to be strong. You know what I mean? Somebody got to be uncompromising. Somebody got to be bold. So we salute you for that. So tell us a little bit about your early days. It said that you had started out as a freelance writer. What was that about?
Oh, sure. I used to do different articles. I did writing for a few years for a Muslim newspaper, and then I went off to becoming a life coach, and I did some articles regarding marriage and dating. And a lot of my friends and peers liked the advice I gave. I loved to cook. They liked my recipes. So they said, you know what, you need to write all of this down. So I started a blog. From the blog, I actually, and because I was a frequent caller into a station called War on the Horizon, I became a War on the Horizon radio host. And shortly after that, I released my first book, God's Gift, which was about a year to a year and a half ago, I think. And it's just ballooned since then. Now I think I'm right at around a dozen books. Two of those are adult books. The rest are children's books. And I'm here talking with you today.
Absolutely. We're on the horizon. That's our brother Irritated Genie, right?
Exactly. Brother Irritated Genie and Brother King Samir Shabazz used to have a program on there. I used to run the boards for him. He came on my show a couple of times. We did Christmas with the Shabazzes one year. That was a classic program. So, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Absolutely. We appreciate that. Shouts out to Brother Irritated Genie, who's been a consistent voice on the front lines and in the battle. And so we want to get right into this. We want to get right into this because it's important now. And your first book was God's Gift, How to Be a Good Black Woman to a Strong Black Man. Now, what were some of the things that you saw, Sister Angela, that our sisters were not doing, or what ways was the strong black man not presenting himself properly? What did you see in writing this book?
Well, there's a basic breakdown in the relationship between black women and black men that makes it almost impossible for us to stay together long enough to raise a family. And even if we do stay together, a lot of times our family units do not function well because the man and the woman don't get along, so there's chaos. So I'm not able to tell a man how to be a man. That's not my resume. I don't know how to do that. But I figured I could at least solve the woman's part of it. You know, a lot, me and my friends have definitely had experience with relationships, trial and error, trying to find out how is the best way to relate to a black man in his specific circumstances, what he's going through on a daily basis, what his insecurities are, how to best communicate with him and bring out the best in him so there's not so much conflict and confrontation. And instead of being enemies, you can actually support each other and be each other's friend. So that was really what God's Gift was all about. And it's not actually just a relationship book. It's about womanhood in general because that's something that mothers and grandmothers are no longer teaching their daughters. So we go into natural health. We go into raising children, how to dress, natural beauty, all kinds of things involving womanhood that will also at the same time make you better in a relationship, more appealing to a man as well.
Certainly. And so what are some things offhand that you noticed in your study that the black woman makes in dealing with a strong black man?
Oh, all kinds of things. Just our communication in general is horrible. We can be very disrespectful. Now, I know a lot of women are sitting there listening and saying, well, black men are guilty of this too. That's true, but I can't worry about them. I'm not a black man. So we're looking at our specific part in this. When we talk to black men, a lot of times we're very disrespectful. Instead of trying to build up their ego, a lot of times we try to crush their ego. We don't know how to be nice, how to build him up. A lot of times, as soon as he shows any signs of rising up, we are the first people to step in and tear him down. Bit by bit, and sometimes we don't even realize that we're doing it, or sometimes we do realize that we're doing it, and we don't know how to stop. So I tried to give tips on how to create a healthy home environment that can be a sanctuary, how to speak to him respectfully. What are some of the things you can say? When he's getting on your nerves, what are some of the things that you can do? How do you just smooth out situations so that you're not fighting on a day-to-day basis? How to pick your battles, those kind of things. How to be respectful, how to be a lady, how to be feminine. Because a lot of times when we think of femininity, we think of being weak because we're thinking about the white standard of femininity, not strong African women who are still feminine women. So that's basically what's broken down in that book quite a bit. You know, just little phrases, little terminology, please, thank you. Very, very basic things, but things that most of us are not doing.
Now, when you say white femininity versus black femininity, can you expound on that? What does that mean for the radio listening audience listening?
Sure. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote this book, because I would read relationship books, and some of the good ones were pretty good ones, were written by white women, but their culture is totally different. I would read all the things that make black women cringe because it makes a woman weak. Things like, you know, if you're a woman, you should stay at home. You shouldn't go out and work because that could threaten your man's manhood. Well, for a black woman, that's ridiculous. We've always worked, mm-hmm. whether it was in the marketplace or having our own business, whatever. We get out there and we make it happen, and there's nothing wrong with that. That doesn't take away from your man's manhood, not in our culture, because we're not useless women. We're not these same women who used to sit around too lazy to nurse our own children. That's their thing. So for us, we can be strong, but we can still have charm. We can still be sweet. We can still be loving, and we can still have a softness for our family, a nurturing for our family. We don't have to throw all of that away just because a white woman thinks that that's going to make us weak.
Absolutely. I just wanted to kind of clarify that, because I know that's kind of controversial in some circles, as a, you know, the whole feminist fight. So I wanted to kind of clarify where you were coming from with that. What are some things that the black man can do, given it some balance? What are some things that the black man can do to better understand his black woman, in your opinion?
Well, to better understand the black woman, you have to realize where we're coming from, that most of us have been abused. Most of us have had our self-esteem lowered, and that's not something that should be taken advantage of. A lot of times black men will see a black woman with low self-esteem and see an easy prey. Well, that's not what a man does. A man protects his community. They protect the weak who cannot protect themselves. So when you see that, that's what you need to do. You shouldn't continue to victimize black women, because that's only going to make a bad situation worse. You have to do your best to either build them up, or some women are kind of beyond that. Some of us are so off the hook, just leave us alone. But whatever you do, you don't want to add to the problem. You don't want to continue to re-victimize people who have already been victimized, been verbally abused, physically abused, sexually abused. You want to build us up, not pull us down, and we need to do the same for you.
Absolutely. Now let's go into this topic of sexual assault, because I know that you're an advocate for survivors, and you're talking about abuse. You know, why is that such a taboo topic within the black community to you?
That's a good question. I don't know why we make that such a taboo topic, because most women go through that, and a lot of men go through that as well, probably close to half. I'd say anywhere from 30 to 50% of men, and most women. If you escape that, either sexual abuse in your childhood or in adulthood, consider yourself very lucky. So it's something that happens all the time, but a lot of people think that they're alone in that because we don't talk about that. Sometimes it happens with older children and younger children. Sometimes it happens between family members. But because it's such a taboo, we are not protecting our children, our women, from these things, our little boys from these things, definitely not them. So we're vulnerable to it, and it's a cycle. It keeps continuing on and on and on. We even saw it with Eddie Long. You know, he grooms these little
right.
boys and does whatever inappropriate things he does. And then when they come out and tell it, we blame the victim, not the freak who did it. Same thing with R. Kelly.
Right.
You know, we want to talk about the girl and she's fast and this and that, but we don't want to talk about the monster who did these things to her. So it's definitely something that we need to look at. It's definitely something that we need to talk about. But beyond just that, we need to take steps to protect our little boys, little girls, women from these kind of assaults.
That's important. That's very important that you mentioned the young men or the males being assaulted, because that's under-talked about. I've noticed that's under-talked about in our community. Have you seen a rise in assault or sexual assault on young men, or is it about the same?
It's hard to say because men don't talk about it as much. It's something that I suspect has always been there. It's something that a lot of men don't even realize they were victimized in that way, because a lot of times it may have been like a female babysitter or something like that. And so in their mind, they're just thinking, yeah, I was a big man. I just got an early start. But they don't realize how that has actually damaged them in their view of women, how it's entered into their psyche, and even affects their relationships. So I think that it's something that's always gone on. Now I think it's becoming more of a problem because of the rise in the acceptance of homosexuality. But it's something, again, I think really needs to be talked about because a lot of men are going around thinking that something that happened to them was their fault or questioning their sexuality and their manhood, and nobody ever tells them it wasn't your fault. And they really need to hear that sometimes more than women, definitely as much as women, that it was not your fault so that they can heal from that.
Absolutely. That makes a whole lot of sense. Brothers and sisters, if you're listening, just joining us, you're listening right now to Sister Angela, Lady Shabazz Freeman, and number to call will be 646-478-4447 tonight to get involved in this discussion. We're talking about saving the Black Child 101 and saving the Black family. Now, this is important. We're talking right now about this sexual assault, and we also have learned, Sister, that you have dealt with this foster care system. And so I'm of the opinion now that this foster care system could be good if used properly, but what I've noticed is that there's a lot of abuse that happens with foster children. Have you seen the same?
Oh, definitely. It's set up for the abuse of children, and the problem is that us as a community, we're too complacent. We don't want to deal with these quote-unquote problem children, so we let them sit in foster care. And while they're in foster care, homosexuals and white people are adopting these children and fostering these children and many times abusing these children, most times sexually abusing these children. It's a haven for that kind of thing. I've had children under my care as small as 3 years old who had already been molested by the time they came to me, actually just a few weeks before they came to me in their prior placement. So it's set up that way. I've had children removed from my home to be put in a dysfunctional situation because I think they knew that if they stayed in a stable environment, they may actually be able to heal and recover. So they sent them to a dysfunctional environment, be it a relative or something like that, to promote that. So I think that that's definitely the objective. So we can't be surprised by that. But at the same time, if there were more responsible Black people stepping up to the plate, they wouldn't have as much of an excuse to give our children to some demon or some homosexual. They'd be in our care.
Yeah, absolutely. Give us your thoughts on this on this wave of homosexuality and this homosexual assault attacking our community. What's your thoughts on it, Sister Bass?
I think it's disgusting, and I think it's something that we need to take a stand against. And it's something that we need to make our leaders take a stand against. I don't think that there is any time left to straddle the fence. If you are in an organization and your leader has not taken a firm stance and made a firm statement against it, you need to reexamine that because either they're so old that they don't know what's going on or they're too weak to fight against it because homosexuals have a lot of power now. Either way, they are not able to lead. They're not fit for leadership. And that's something that we all need to be stronger about. Some of us have gay family members or gay friends, and so we don't want to vocalize this, but anybody with common sense knows that a penis does not go in an anus and other things. I'm not going to be vulgar any more than that. That's bad enough. You know how the body is made. You know what's natural, and we all need to stand up against that. It's disgusting, and I don't think that we want our children to grow up to think that that's okay and that they should do that kind of thing. Just as we stand up against interracial relationships, we definitely need to stand up against homosexuality, and we have to demand that our leaders do the same because a lot of them are weak. And like you said, somebody has to be strong. That's not African.
Somebody got to be strong. And on that, I'm saying it to me, and I know you agree, this is an assault on the Black family. It's an assault on the Black child. It's an assault on the Black mind. And I mean, you look at these entertainers. They're running around wearing skirts and, you know, I mean, just you know, you seen the NFL player the other day kissing his boyfriend in the mouth. I mean, this is stuff that, you know, 40, 50 years ago, you never would have saw on television, but you see it today on a 24-hour basis on TV. Crazy.
Not even that long ago. You wouldn't have seen it until, I think, Jerry Springer in the mid-90s is when it began getting really popular, and it really had it was like warfare to us because before that we were strong, we were conscious, everybody was getting into Nation of Islam and all these different organizations that were strong back then. But the thing is, you're not going to trust a homosexual to protect the community. He's not going to do it. He can't protect his own backside. He can't protect the community. Also, most homosexuals are racially treasonous. So knowing that basically if you effeminize this man and take away his manhood, that's the first line of defense is gone. And now you also, on top of that, have the remaining straight people fighting man against woman, woman against man. Where does that leave us? We're completely vulnerable, and now all hell is breaking loose.
Exactly, exactly. Now touch on that, because you are a sister who is very keen on family, very keen on marriage. And kind of talk about the assault on the black family and the black marriage. Why are so many of our families ending in divorces, and why are so many of our families falling apart, in your opinion?
A lot of reasons. I'd say some of the main ones are feminism, which took our women from a mindset of black liberation to woman liberation, which is ridiculous. It sounds good to us, but really our oppressors are not black men. They do some bad things to us, yes, but our oppressors are not black men. Our oppressors are white men and women, but we don't realize that. We think that by getting free from the black man, we're going to be free. That's not true. So that was problem number one, is feminism. Problem number two was crack cocaine that came in and absolutely devastated our families. That is the first time that I can recall that black mothers were no longer mothers. So we weren't teaching our children. We weren't there to teach our children. Our minds were just gone. And that affected not only the children of quote-unquote crackheads, but also just the culture in general. And then right after that, during that and after that, was hip-hop. It went from being kind of fun to being conscious to being just outright degenerate. And my generation and all those that followed mine grew up thinking that that was cute. That's how we should be. You know, we were in words and hoes and bees and all this kind of stuff, and that became cool when we adopted that. And that's why we can't get along now, because we function out of complete degeneracy. We don't have a healthy respect for each other. We don't have a healthy respect for ourselves. So why would you want to get along?
Exactly, exactly. Now, let's kind of bring this right to the black child as I prepare to go to the phone lines. Our black children, now we're seeing more and more of our children that are being warehoused and incarcerated, and more of our children, in particular our black children, that are either being lost to the streets or, you know, are ending their lives early. Now, can you kind of talk to us, you know, on what's happening? What's happening with the black child? Why is the black child, in some cases, rebelling, you know, against, you know, against whatever? Why are they out there like that, as they say, wilding out, in your opinion?
Well, they should rebel because we as parents are failing them, and we have no problem failing them. We have no remorse about it. So they're not wrong in rebelling. I just wish that they could rebel in a more productive way. Number one, they're in pain. A lot of them don't have fathers because the father did not stick around, because the mother did not make it an environment where the father wanted to stick around. We're both to blame. It's not just one or the other. We have not provided them with healthy families, number one. Number two, like I said earlier, a lot of them have been sexually abused, so they're dealing with that pain. But worst of all, we don't have the decency that any animal has for their young. If you have a baby zebra, they're going to learn very early that when a lion comes around, you need to run because that lion is your enemy and he will devour you. We don't love our children enough to tell them who their enemy is and be serious about it and uncompromising about it and unapologetic about it. We'll sit there and tell them to integrate and, you know, worship Martin Luther King, and we shall, you know, we all just need to get along and hold hands and all this BS. We won't tell them that these crackers want to kill you. They want you dead. This is how you handle yourself. This is how you conduct yourself so that you have a better chance of making it out. That little Susie over there is not your friend. She wants you dead. That is their goal. These are your enemies. They have been since they've been on the planet. They're a murderous race of people who have no good in them. We will not talk to our children like this. And I think that that's why my books have become so popular recently, because they have that kind of stance. They'll say devil. They'll call them beasts. They'll call them savages. They'll tell our history from the perspective that not only will tell the children who their enemy is, but will also give them pride about who they are. Because as long as they don't know who their enemy is and how white supremacy works, they feel bad about themselves. They think the problem is them. Yeah. Something's wrong with them. Okay. Well, when they start reading my books, they start to see, no, nothing is wrong with me. Something's wrong with this crack, and we need to deal with that.
Jeez. That's what I'm talking about. 646-478-4447, 646-478-4447. We'll go to our first caller here. Your area code is 504-432. 504-432. You're on live with Black Power Radio, Sean Saddam Kweli, and Sister Angela Freeman. Come on with it. Talk to us. Welcome, Black Power.
Sean, Black Power, Mrs. Angela Freeman.
Black Power.
Yes, Brother Sean, after the end of the show, I want you to, I'm going to give you my, just give me a call after the end of the show. I want to give you my email address where you can send me that 10-point platform program. And this is what I want to say. First of all, the reason why I can, we are in the situation that we're in, black men, we have to stop bending over and giving evil an opening. We need to stand up and be men. Men, a lot of this stuff wouldn't be going on in our community if we would stand up and be men. We can't put everything off on these women. We got to stand up. And for the conscious people, we need to put our differences aside, stop talking about who conscious and who more are. Who's more articulate, man? We need to come together and stop all this foolishness and work together. You wouldn't have all this homosexuality if you had strong men. We just bending over and we giving even opening.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
We got to stand. We got to stand up.
Give us a question, Mr. Adler. She got these strong black books out here. So called.
Brother Sean?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Now, repeat it again, brother.
I was saying our sister Angela's on this line. She got these small pro-black books, but the so-called conscious community is not supporting that.
We got to get them books. Those who conscious and who mean well, we got to get those books, and we got to put them in our people's hands. I'm not going to force you, but it's there. If you want the information, it's there.
Yes, sir. All right, black man.
Yeah. All right, Black Power, Brother Sean, but call me at the end of the show where I can get that 10-point platform program.
Okay, Black Power, I'll call you, but thank you so much.
All right, Black Power.
Black Power. Next caller here, area code is 562-239. 562-239. You're on live with Black Power Radio. And Sister Angela, Lady Shabazz Freeman, come on in. Welcome. Talk to us. We're talking about saving the black child, saving the black family. Talk to us. Your thoughts, your opinion, Black Power.
Black Power, brother, National Chief of Staff. Your brother,
Black
Ali, Power. Ali, your West Coast regional rep out here on the West Coast. Black
hey,
Power,
bro.
brother. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No,
yes, sir, brother.
You
thank
said,
you. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you for this, sister, brother. Brother, National Chief of Staff, you know, I work in mental health. And, brother, I have had discussions about this whole gay thing. I mean, with therapists that have master's degrees. And like Sister said, I see the assault. Dr. Umar Johnson spoke on the assault. You know, I used to end it with just man plus woman equals life. I don't care how you cut it. Man plus woman equals life. All right, without man and woman, there's no life. And I have had this discussion with therapists, and they have tried to convince me that gay men can raise black boys. And I'm like, absolutely not, you know, to be men. I'm like, no, this is the twisted nature that's going on in the world today. This is nothing new, but it's so twisted, even from our president on down or on up, or wherever you want to put it. It's just this twisted nature. And I think it's just a clear sign, brother, that the Israelites, the chosen, us as black people, we need to block all these other groups out, brother, and just rely on each other and come together as one family. I've had this discussion with all the other militant groups, revolutionary groups, that is locking all these other groups out and quit all this fucking mixing. I'm with you. I'm just black and more black, and rely and teach our people just like other communities do. You know what I mean? And but brother, out here on the West Coast, this gay thing is really out of control. I mean, you can you let me tell you this, brother. I heard an example where a brother was called, a sister was called a nigger on the job, and there was nothing done. But you call somebody a faggot, and they wanted to suspend and fire and reprimand everything else. You know, it's just this twisted nature that's going on in the world today. And like you said, it is a complete assault on our people. That's all it is. Because long as men and men are together, women together, you know, you can't produce. But I'm going to leave it at this, good brother. We're going to keep it black. We're going to keep it strong. We're going to keep loving men, loving women, women loving men. But check this out. Black power, man plus woman equals life. Black power.
Black power, black man, black power. We appreciate that. We appreciate it. Thank you. Also, my sisters, Lady Shabazz, you got them fired up on here.
Yes,
fired
and
up
I love
here.
To say, for anybody who's sitting there thinking like we're overreacting and we don't understand this whole homosexual thing, the people that I would really go to for that would be Baba Mwalimu Baruti. He has wonderful information on that. But there's a dynamic lecture series, and it's on YouTube by the Irritated Genie called The Effeminization of the Black Man. If you have any doubt in your mind as to how serious this homosexual assault is, you've got to go there because he's the one that really brought this to the forefront years and years ago.
Ain't no doubt about it. He's banging hard right now on some homosexual issues. And he's banging hard as hell right now. Salute to him. We'll go to another call here. Eric Cole is 314-792. 314-792, you're on live with Black Power Radio. Sean Saddam Kweli, Sister Lady Shabazz, come on in with your question, your comment, please. Welcome, Black Power.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Hey, how you doing, Queen? This is National MOI, Sister Amira. How you doing?
I'm excellent. How are you, sis?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I definitely want you to, I get a lot of sisters inboxing me and then I have a sister circle that I'm working with, and a lot of them are having like some extreme difficulties. A twofold questions, right? And I want you to kind of address them in dealing with other sisters, baby mothers, so to speak. That's one thing, and how you deal with them, the negative aspects of that, and also dealing with strong men and leadership as well. Because you kind of talked about that a little bit, but you didn't really go into detail. So we really need you to kind of break that down, sis.
Okay. The baby mother issue can be very difficult. I know because I've been through it. And this is something that I say in God's gift is before you settle down to a man, you need to know his situation. There cannot continue to be this first date or third date and we hopping into bed, because when you do that, your eyes are closed. You need to investigate. Back in the Nation of Islam, we used to call it courtship. You find out what you're getting into before you get into it. So before you even take it there, you need to meet his children, see if they're well-behaved or if they act like some savages, because you're going to be dealing with it. You need to meet the baby's mama and see how she's going to be. And sometimes they'll switch it up. They'll be sweet at first, and then they turn into a little gremlin on you. But you really have to just experiment and find out what the best way is to deal with them. Sometimes it may be that it might be better for you to deal with her directly. If the mother and father have a horrible relationship, then maybe you may be able to handle that a little bit better because there's not as much animosity there. Other situations, they're going to hate you because you stepping into the situation or whatever. It might be better for the husband to do that. But no matter what, you have to put your foot down. I remember, when I got into a situation with my stepdaughter's mother, she had a habit of speaking to my husband in a certain way because they didn't like each other. I understood that. But when I became the wife, I had to let her know in no uncertain terms, I understand that you're angry with him, but you're not going to speak to him anymore like that. I wouldn't allow his mother to speak to him like that, so you definitely are not going to do that. She didn't like that, but she also knew that I was crazy, and she kind of ceased and desisted at that point. So sometimes you need to check them, but you still need to do it in a respectful manner. You don't need to get gutter. You don't need to get hood. But you do need to let them know in no uncertain terms, this is now my family, and this is not going down, and take it from there. And what was your question as far as leadership, though?
Yeah, you said you had a book, and we definitely need you to talk about where we can get your book from as well. on dealing with strong black men. Sisters in dealing with strong black men.
Okay. Well, all my books are available either on my website, AuthorAngelaFreeman.com. You can go there and get a list of all my books. Like I said, I think there's around 12 now. I've lost count. And they're also available through Amazon. That's basically how they're sold, through Amazon, but you can come to my site to see what all I have available. As far as dealing with a strong black man, you have to understand what a strong black man is. A strong, because sometimes, especially if we don't grow up with fathers, we don't realize what strength is, and we'll just settle for anything. Somebody yelling and screaming and being ultra aggressive, that's not necessarily strong. Somebody that's strong, yes, can be assertive when need be, but they're also intelligent. They're also respectful. A strong black man protects his family and the community. So if you have somebody just puffing his chest out but ain't going to bust a grape, except for nobody but you, he might bust you against the head, but he's scared of the cracker. Well, that's not a strong black man. So when you're dealing with that kind of man, he should have enough intelligence to be able to deal with you, and he should inspire cooperation within you. I know a lot of women get a little upset when we start talking about submission, but we can at least say cooperation, where you're not working against him. And so that's where you need to be. When you find that man, when you're looking at a man, you need to see if you guys are going in the same direction, if you have the same goals, desires, and ambitions. And if you do, it should be no problem to fall in line. But if you just go with the first thing that jumps at you, and then there's going to be conflict because you guys are not going in the same direction, that's when you're going to have the problem. But a strong black man, if you're a decent black woman willing to cooperate, a strong black man should be able to bring that out of you.
Right. That's beautiful, sis. That is so beautiful. All right, sis. Well, I definitely would be calling back in for some more questions from my sister circle. I definitely do look forward to finally meeting you in person. And thank you so much, and we would definitely pump your books up. Thank you so much, Queen.
Thank you. I look forward to meeting you, too. It's going to be fun.
All right. Next caller here, your area code is 347-884. You're on live with Black Power Radio. Our sister Lady Shabazz talking about saving the black child, saving the black family, and saving your black self. Come on in. Welcome. Your question, your comment, Black Power.
Hey, Black Power. This is Sister Icy. Can you hear me?
Hey, sis.
Hey,
Black
Power.
Black Power.
Black Power Queen, how are you?
Black Power, I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Can't complain. This is the National Minister of Youth. And, well, I have a question for you regarding the foster care children. Like, what would be, like, the best combat, like, for that system? Like, you know, like, what would be, like, the best combat? How can we fight against such an organized organization such as ACS? Or, you know, what can we do to, like, combat that?
Well, a lot of people aren't going to like this, but I'm going to say the first thing is to avoid it altogether. That
mm-hmm.
means we have to be responsible and make good decisions and create stable families, and then keep the cracker out of our business. Don't go calling the police all the time, all this kind of stuff. Keep the devil out your business, and they won't be able to take the children to begin with. But in order to do that, we have to have stable relationships. If you're getting knocked upside the head every day, then, yeah, you're going to have to call the police, and your children probably going to get taken at some point. So we have to be responsible from the get-go. But other than that, more of us that have the means to do that need to get involved. And a lot of people think, well, I'm not qualified to be a foster parent because I'm not married, or I only live in an apartment or my neighborhood or something like that. I don't have a lot of money. Most of the time, you don't need all of that. They make it very easy to be able to foster or adopt black children because they're not really looked upon as valuable anyway. That's why they can give them to all these homos like it ain't nothing. The qualifications are not that rigorous. If you can take care of yourself generally, you can accept a child. So I think that at some point, we're going to have to make that a major point to adopt or foster, whichever you prefer, because if you adopt, that child's going to stay with you. So, yes, it's a bigger commitment, but also you don't have to deal with the system as much. You deal with them for a little while until you adopt the child. You ain't got to be around them anymore. Foster care is not as big of a commitment because it's not a permanent placement. The goal is to reunite that child with their family, but then you're going to be dealing with the system. So you have to see which one is going to work the best for you, but we all have to do that. Number one, keep the crack out your business so they're not taking your children, and then be willing to take in a child who has gone through that and know that these are not going to be, quote-unquote, normal children, that they've been exposed to a lot. So mm-hmm. you're going to have to help them through those issues.
That's right.
But a lot
that's
of us do that because a lot of us really have been through some of those same issues, too.
Yes. All right. And also, like, I mean, I love what you were saying because, like, it goes right in alignment with what I always say. You know, us as women, like, I really believe, like, right now is, like, the time for us as women to stand up. Like, a lot of our men, you know, are standing up and they're trying their best, but it's also up for us as women to stand up. Like, you know, a lot of us, like, are like, behind the scenes, but I believe, like, this is time for us to become more out in the forefront as women. You know, like Yan Sati out there, when she said if the men weren't going to fight, that we were as women were going to fight, and she stood up, and I just feel like that's the time right now. And I just want to put a call out there for three things, actually. First one is the youth ministry itself. I'm looking to partner, to work with, to any type of affiliate that's really serious about fighting on behalf of our youth. Like, just you can link up with me. My number is 347-884-2156. Or if you want to email me, that's naturalyouthminister@gmail.com. So I'm looking for affiliates, partnership, whatever, with the youth ministry. And also, if you have any ideas, like things that you're really passionate about, bring them forth. Another thing, June 1st, is, like I heard you, Queen, talk about Dual Horizon, but it reminds me, Irritated Genie will be downtown Brooklyn at St. Nicholas Bookstore talking about the very same thing, how about homosexuality and how, you know, how it's basically an attack to feminize our young black men. So if y'all, anyone's interested, please come out to the St. Nicholas Bookstore. Also, us as the Panther Party will be in the house. We're looking for new recruits. We're looking for people just to sign up and join up and fight, you know, for this cause and with the movement. So please also, like, just come out. Let's link together. And every Wednesday, the UAM, they have at 1061 very powerful speakers. There, myself and one of my other brothers, Brother Seville, will be speaking June 11th. So please come out. And that's at 1061 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Christian Cultural Center. And Queen, love you. Queen, I love you. I appreciate you. I love you, National Chief of Staff, Black Power.
Black power.
Black power.
Can I say something before we move on?
Certainly.
Yes.
Oh, I just wanted to say you brought up Yaa Santiwa, and that's so true. That's so un-African for black women to feel like they just have to be in the background grabbing a glass of water and fanning the brothers while they do all the work. The only place you see that in Africa is where either some white people or some Arabs have taken over and polluted our culture. That's not us at all. In the book Sankofa Super Heroes, this is a book that caused international controversy with South Africans. They tried to get it removed from Amazon a couple months ago. But Yaa Santiwa is one of the characters, and I made sure that I used both men and women characters in that book so that our youth could see different examples of real black leaders, not coons, not anybody that was soft, but people that unapologetically fought for our race. So little girls can look in this book and see role models for themselves just like little boys can. So I think that that's a really good point. I posted on Facebook yesterday because it really bothered me. I went to a martial arts seminar over the weekend with a man called Guru Danny Inosanto. And it bothers me because when I go to these martial arts seminars, I never see black women there. There may be 80 people in a room. I might see 3 or 4 black men. Never a black woman. We got to get out of that because, yes, it is a black man's job to defend us and protect us, but also we ain't no white women. We can stand up and fight too, and we need to be at the range. We need to be training. We need to be doing all this and not be trying to look cute all the time. So I thought that was a really good point that you made, and I agree 100%.
That's real talk, and Danny Anasanto, he's Bruce Lee's student, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. I'm just trying to draw the connection. That's a good class, good seminar. All right, next call here. Your area code is 215-982-215-982. You're on live with Black Power Radio. Our sister, Lady Shabazz, talking about saving the black family, saving the black child, saving black people. Come on in with your question, your comment, please. Welcome, Black Power.
Black Power, Black Family, Black Power, National Chief of Staff, and beautiful Queen Lady Shabazz. You know, this is a powerful show that you have on today, and our youth are so important, man. And I'm out here in the street. I'm on my way home right now, and I just wanted to make sure that I gave an announcement that we'll be hosting our National Chief of Staff, and the theme will be on We Would Die to Save Our Black Youth. Our local objective, the sixth local objective, is about our youth and the community and the nation and our black family, period. And how we need to redirect and direct and take control, you know, of our destiny, right, which is gods and kings that we are. You know, so we have our National Minister of Information, and she's going to be one of our speakers. We have our National Field Marshal. He's one of the speakers that will be there. I definitely want to be there to be hosted by the Mid-Atlantic region of the New Black Panther Party. Our sister in Charlotte, North Carolina, Sister Zaida, and our Minister of Information there, Brother Kamal, and the rest of the Mid-Atlantic region and the rest of the New Black Panther Party. You know, we just want to make sure that our youth get the protection. And, you know, like they need to be preserved, and they need to be enforced, and they need to be protected. You know, they need to be educated, they need to be cared for, and we got to do it. You know, so I'm looking forward to that. You know, and Sister Shabazz, if there's any way that we can get in touch with you and make it happen for you to come down and help us out, you know, and to pass on some information, and we're gonna make that happen.
Yes, sir. You can always contact me through my website, authorangelafreeman.com. Just send me a message, and I'll definitely get back in touch with you. Certainly.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. All right, now, Black Power, Black Family.
Black Power.
All right, Brother Black Power, we appreciate you so much. Thank you, Brother Commander Haru. We appreciate you, Black man. All right.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. This is some serious, serious dialogue that's happening here. But I wanna stick right to this now, because it's obviously a big issue. This male female relationships, and you have done a good job in addressing this in your books and in your writings. Now, one thing I noticed, Sister Shabazz, is that you're strong on imagery. Your imagery is much like New Black Panther imagery, strong as hell. And what I'm surprised that more of the so-called conscious community has not rallied around you. Why do you think that is?
You know what? I think that a lot of people just are not familiar with me. I do this not as a way of income. I do it because I love doing it. So I don't spend a lot of money on promotion and things like that. Mostly it's word of mouth. So the people that do know about me, they support me more than I could imagine. I mean, there's people who have 5 books. There's people that have 10 books. Like, they buy any book that I put out because they believe in it that much. So I appreciate those people. But a lot of people just either have not heard about me, or I'm very outspoken. I don't bite my tongue. Sometimes I say things people don't like, so they might not want to support me because I may have said something. But that just is what it is. Like I said, we cannot always be politically correct. If you realize that we're at war and you really believe that, then you're not going to be politically correct. I'm going to say what needs to be said. And if people don't agree with it, then, you know, that's on them. I really can't be worried about that. So I think a lot of that is just lack of exposure, especially with the children's books. I went from, like I said, getting a lot of interviews to not so much. I think that it scared people off, especially when the South Africans came out against me, because it was pretty hard. Like, they were really trying to get me removed from Amazon and do a lot of other things, a lot of death threats and all kinds of stuff. So that shook a lot of people. And I don't know why, because it didn't shake me, but it did shake a lot of other people. And so I think that that caused some people to back off a little bit. But that also tells you who's real and who's not and who you don't want to be surrounded by. So that, to me, is just like house cleaning.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you this. Why the focus on children's books? And I know that many mothers out there and fathers out there think that, the nursery rhyme that comes out the store or the standardized children's story is good to read for their child at nighttime. Why did you focus on children's books, and why is it important to put this kind of information in our children's heads?
You know what? I didn't ever mean to do it. It happened by accident. God's Gift was out, and it was doing well, and I was waiting to release the second book, which was called Conscious Entertaining, which was basically a book, because a lot of times when people get conscious, all of a sudden they feel like they have to be hermits. They don't want to go out. They don't want to do this. They don't want to do that. Everything seems like Negro stuff or sport and play. We don't know what to do. So I wrote a book about some conscious things that we can do and still have fun and still have a social life. I was waiting on that, and I had a friend who had just had a child. And so I was like, you know what, wouldn't it be cool to do an ABC book and not have all this BS in it, to actually have some real pro-black stuff in it? So I was playing around, and I put together my first children's book, The Conscious Book of ABC. And I sent it to a few people, and they loved it. I didn't know if it was any good or not, but they really liked it. And so that's what started it, because when you open it up, it'll say, like, A is for Africa, and it'll go down the line. B is for black, C is for compliment, and then it gets to the page with D, and it's D is for devil, and got a picture of a little cracker child on it. So they were like, whoa, for real? That's how you come? And I was like, yeah, D is going to be for devil. It's my book. I can do that. And so people really liked that book, and I didn't do any for a while. And then I got the idea in my head for Sankofa Super Heroes, because I felt like black history is so boring, and when it's told to us, it's told in such a derogatory way that we're almost embarrassed. We just feel like we were slaves and nothing else. So I felt like we needed a book to showcase our militant heroes, not the soft ones, not the coons, but the ones that we can really be proud of that'll instill self-esteem in children. And so I started writing that book, and that book just became better than I thought it was ever going to be, and it took off. And I got such good reviews from it, and parents saying, wow, this really changed my child. I see a difference in my child. So I continued after that, because as long as, when I write a book for an adult, a lot of times we're set in our ways. We might change for a couple of days, but then we go back to doing the same thing we've always done. But if I can influence a child, there's a better chance that child is going to stay on the path. So honestly, I just think it's more powerful.
Absolutely. Use the term conscious entertaining. Now, has it been in your experience that the conscious community has been dry, or when people come to consciousness that they lose their sense of humor? Is that what you saw? What did you see when you came into the mindset to do conscious entertaining?
Well, I'll say it, because like when I came in to consciousness, I came in through the Nation of Islam, so all of a sudden, you got to dress a certain way. You can't do this. You can't do this. It's like a whole list of things we can't do. And a lot of people feel like that. Like, okay, you watching football, you cooning. You going to movies, you cooning. We can't do this. We can't do that. You feel like there's so many restrictions on what we can't do. So with that book, my idea was just, okay, no, we can't do things. There's plenty of intelligent things that we can do, productive things that we can do to have a good time. So I focused on, what we can do for our children. What we can do for women's gatherings, how we can make men's gatherings better, how we can celebrate our different cultures around the world, how we can recognize our elders, just all different kinds of entertaining ideas that we can do. And it had recipes in it, like no meat, no nuts, no soy, so anybody with food restrictions could get into these recipes. So it was pretty a really well-rounded book, a very interesting book for people who wanted to become more like homemakers, more domestic, and really entertain at home. Because another thing is, when we go out in the streets looking for entertainment, that's where we get into problems. That's where we end up getting shot or getting harassed by police or getting involved in some kind of craziness. When we're at home, we're safe. That's our base. But we don't realize that. A lot of times we're so busy because our homes aren't stable. We want to run away and get out of our home, that we don't focus on making our home our refuge and actually the center of activity, not just for us, but sometimes our entire neighborhood can be, our home can be a safe place that really makes a difference if we allow it to be.
That's a great, great point. Some of our sisters, when they come into consciousness or they come into the movement, they run into sexist men or men who, you know, as you referred to earlier, believe that the only place for a woman is to rub their feet or to hold their cup. What are some things that the black man can do in particular to help his own sexism? And how do you, what will be some advice for the sisters as they run into these sexist men?
Well, for the sisters, I just don't tolerate it. I'm not a forceful person, but I'm also not going to sit down in a corner. They say, you know, the hen knows when the sun rises, but she lets the rooster make the announcement. So, yeah, you know, I'll let the man stay up and be a man and be a leader. I enjoy watching black men lead, but at the same time, that doesn't mean that I don't have something to say. So if I see that black leader going to the left, I'm going to pull his coattail and bring them back. So we cannot be made to, like you said, take that subservient kind of white woman role. But at the same time, we do need to let men be men. It's a balancing act there. So for men, I would say, number one, listen to women. I know that we talk a lot, sometimes too much, but quiet kept black men, especially conscious black men, talk a lot too. Y'all can talk and run y'all mouth. So it's not just women that talk too much. So listen and see if we have something to say. Don't always say that anything that comes out of our mouth is because we're emotional. Number one, there's nothing wrong with being emotional. If you don't want somebody that's emotional, I mean, maybe you gay because a woman's going to be emotional. Deal with it. That's something that compliments you as long as it's not irrational. But a lot of times men will use that to shut women up. Oh, she's just being emotional or something like that. That's ridiculous, and that shows that you're weak because you can't really back up your argument, throwing out whatever you can to shut the woman up. And if she is not strong in her position, that'll work against her. But women have to figure out what their role is going to be. There are some women who, yeah, their contribution is going to be cooking the food at a gathering. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you're a good speaker, then you need to speak. If you're a good writer, then you need to write. If you're a good organizer, you need to do that. And if you can kick butt and do martial arts and be shooting at people, then that's what you need to do. Always use your gift, and don't let your gender be an excuse not to use your gift just to make somebody else feel more comfortable with themselves. That's ridiculous.
Absolutely. Want to get your opinion on a current event, a couple of them. But I saw something, and I think this comes off of Black News, blacknews.com, where they were saying that the black woman has put herself, a group of black women put themselves on a quest to strip Asians of their hair industry dominance. Some black women now want to run the weave industry and that whole hair industry dominance. In your opinion, is that a good thing or bad thing? What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, that depends on how you look at it. I definitely think that we need to stop going to Asians. I haven't been to an Asian store in I don't know how long. We can stop a lot of that by going natural. However, they are now trying to get into the natural hair industry. So at some point, a lot of us do anyway, start making your own products that you can get from the grocery store, avoid the chemicals, and avoid the Asians. That's one way to do it. I have no problem with us getting into the beauty industry. The only thing is, what kind of beauty are we representing? I have no problem with fake hair. I do have a problem with straight fake hair. So if all we're going to be doing is replacing them and selling perms that have all kinds of toxic chemicals in it, straight weave, which are not our standard of beauty, skin lightening cream, all this kind of nonsense, then I don't necessarily agree with that. I'm not necessarily going to support that because I still think that's toxic to the community. But if you're going to be in there and be doing natural hair products, kinky weaves, things like that, I'm all for it. We definitely have to take control of our economics, but I don't think that we need to do it in a way that's going to continue to hurt us and make us feel lower about ourselves. We have to celebrate our own standard of beauty.
Certainly agree with you. Another one here out of tellmenow.com where they're talking about women prisoners, and this is something that we have to touch because a lot of it used to be majority black man But the black woman is being incarcerated at a high rate too now. And out of California, women prisoners and predominantly black women prisoners sterilized to cut welfare costs in California. What's your thoughts on that sterilization in the prison system for the black
woman? That's something they've done before. I heard stories of them doing that years ago. I think I don't know if it was in the 40s or 50s they were sterilizing people. That's something that has been an issue and continues to be an issue. Even if they don't sterilize, they give us much stronger birth control that's much harder to heal from, like Depo-Provera and things like that. They're more likely to give that to you if you're black than white. Planned Parenthood, period. A lot of us women, we love Planned Parenthood because it lets us be sexually irresponsible. But we don't realize that Margaret Sanger was a eugenist. So basically that's set up for our genocide so that we can continue to kill our babies and then go out and continue to be sexually irresponsible. So, yes, that's bad. The government did that. But also we need to look at ourselves because we're killing our own babies, and we have no conscience. Some people have had, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 abortions, and that's fine. But then we want to cry when somebody else does it to us. Yes, that's wrong, and yes, we need to address that, and we need to fight that, but we also need to look at ourselves and what we're doing. Because a dead black baby is a dead black baby. An unborn black baby is an unborn black baby, whether it's because of the prison system or whether it's because we're making bad decisions.
That's right. Number to call, everybody, 646-478-4447, 646-478-4447. We're talking to the Lady Shabazz right now on a number of black issues. I want to get your thoughts on this upcoming biopic of Nina Simone. Nina Simone is scheduled to be played by, I believe her name is Zoe Saldana. I think that's how you pronounce her name. I may be saying it wrong, but you hear what I'm talking about? Nina Simone is going to be played right now by Zoe Saldana, she's a light-skinned actress. A lot of people in the conscious community are angry because they believe that Hollywood should have gotten a darker-skinned female black woman to play it. And she's of Chicano heritage, I believe. I'll look that up. But what are your thoughts on that? Just in Hollywood in general, and the light or white is right push that still goes on in Hollywood today. What's your thoughts?
I think that it's been a problem historically. I don't know enough about that movie to really comment on it because from what I heard, she was like a black person from Dominican. What would be considered black if she was born in America? Sometimes we act a little different when somebody comes from a Spanish-speaking background, but to me it's really not much different. So I don't know. I'm going to leave that. If dark-skinned women are offended by that, then I'm going to go for that. You know, I'm not a dark-skinned sister, so I really can't comment on that because I don't know how it feels. If they have a problem with it, then I'd say it's a problem. But the bigger problem is that we're not creating our own images. If we were the ones telling our stories, we wouldn't have these problems. That's why I like writing the books that I write. I have another book coming out in a week or two called Insurrection. It's on the Haitian Revolution. This is the first time that I know of that it's been told from our perception. That's very important when you start to be able to control the images and the media that's put out and that we consume. So it's one thing to complain and say, oh, that's so wrong, they shouldn't have done it like that. Okay, but why don't we do it? Because we have money. We waste so much money on liquor and cigarettes and weaves and all kind of other stuff. We could put our money together and we could make our own movie, but we don't do that. White people are doing their job. It's not their job to show us in any way that's going to heal us, give us self-esteem, or make us feel better. Their job is to make us feel like trash, and the darker, the more so. You know, the more vicious the attack is going to be. So as long as we're not willing to put our money where our mouth is, I mean, we can complain about it, but are we going to come up with a solution, or are we just going to whine? We're not children anymore.
Exactly. Now, tell us, because I know we have some people in the radio listening audience that want to be future authors or, you know, they want to publish. How easy is it or how hard is it to actually write a book, Sister Lady Shabazz? Tell us the process. What goes into making a book or books the caliber of what you make? How do we do it?
Well, it depends. You have to have some kind of writing skill if you're going to write it yourself. There are other options if you don't want to write it yourself. But, you know, you have to have a unique story to tell. A lot of times people email me and say, you know, write this book or write that book. And sometimes I get good ideas, but a lot of times I'm not going to do it because I don't think I can do justice to that or I don't think it's for me to do. You have to know what your voice is, and you have to know what makes you different than somebody else. There's a reason why people buy my books versus other books. So I have to know what that is. I have to know what that draw is and continue to do that. That's what works for me. When people buy my books, they expect something completely against integration, completely against homosexuality, very strong, very African. And if I go against that, then nobody's going to buy my book. So I can't just do anything. I think a lot of times people just want to write a book to write a book. They don't have anything unique to tell. They don't have a real story. But if you do, then the first thing to do is to write the book, because a lot of people will spend 10 years talking about how they want to write a book and they don't do it because they're afraid of what comes after that. How am I going to get it published? Is it going to sell? Blah, blah, blah. The hardest part of writing a book is just writing it. Once you have it written, you can figure out the rest. I actually offer consultations for people who are serious about becoming an author. For $50, I sit down there and I'll run them through the whole process. I'll follow up with them. I do all that because that's easy. That doesn't take long. What takes long is to write the book. Just stop procrastinating, stop talking about it, and actually do it.
What are your thoughts on present-day print media? I know that many newspapers are shutting down now, and a lot of the hardback paper copies of newspapers and even some books in some cases are going out of print. What are your thoughts there? Is it still important to have print media, print publishing, or should we go completely digital in today's time?
No, definitely not. And I do believe in digital work. Some authors are really bougie like that, and they're like, no, I only believe in print. I believe in both. I think there's a time and place. Because when somebody gets my ebook on their phone, they can look at it on the go. If they're in the car and their children are noisy, they can put one of my books on their iPad or their phone or whatever, and have them look at it. And that's very convenient. But the thing is, what about when the power goes down? Or what if somebody decides to pull that offline or something like that's not available? Then you don't have that book. So I definitely believe in print, and I think that any serious author is going to put their book out in print. The electronic version is an option, and it needs to be there for that convenience and for those tech people. But I don't like ebooks. If I can have my choice, I want a book in my hand. I'm old school, so I'm always going to print a book, and I would suggest other people do the same. It's very important because if something is electronic, somebody can take that from you. If something's in print, as long as you have that book, it's yours. And more books are going out of print, especially the classics. And some people are even buying the rights to those books. White people are buying the rights to some of those classic books and choosing not to reprint them. That way they have the control over what we have and what we don't have. So it's very, very important.
That's great teaching. Take some calls here. Got an area code 215-982. 215-982. You're on live with Black Power Radio. It's the latest Shabazz talking about saving the black family, saving the black child, saving your black self. Talk to us. Welcome. Your question, comment, Black Power.
Black Power, sir. I was already on already. This is Haru Kahuti, Philadelphia.
Oh, okay, yeah, your hand was still up, Brother Haru. I thought you had a question.
Oh, no. I'm fine, thank you. I'm just enjoying the show. Powerful show.
All right. Excellent. Black Power. Another caller here may be the same case, Brother Harold. 504-432, 504-432. Black Power, you got Black Power.
Well, brother, I'm just listening at the show, but basically, like I'm saying, brother, we got to stand up, you know, take our ground, you know, stand our ground and stuff, you know. But basically, I'm just listening at the show, brother. I like what y'all doing. Black Power.
All right, Black Power. Both y'all brothers had it up, so we wanted to make sure that I wasn't slighting you, brothers. But definitely, we definitely got to stand up. And that's some important information that you just gave us, Sister Baz, is just going ahead and doing it, because I'm going to tell you, I got a whole bunch of ideas, but procrastinated, you know what I mean? I know there's people that are out here listening that, you know, have all kind of ideas, but we procrastinate. What were some of the motivating factors that helped you to overcome your procrastination when you were getting
started? I had never thought to write a book. I was good at writing essays and articles. I was not a book writer. But after I said, you know, enough people had told me, look, you write a book. I finally broke down and said, fine. I just said, okay, I'm going to do it. But I have to do it before I lose interest. So I'm the type of person who writes very, very quickly. Because if it takes me too long, I'll lose interest and I won't get it done. I have 3 books right now that are like 80% done, and it would take nothing to finish them, but I just lost interest. I got to wait until I get my interest again. So when I was writing God's Gift, I took my laptop and shut myself away for about 10 days from early. Mm-hmm. I get up early in the morning, so like from 4 or 5 in the morning until probably 10 or 11 at night, I just wrote everything that I thought about. I took some things from my blog. I took some things from personal experience, and I just wrote day and night. And in 10 days, I had the first copy of my book that I could send off to be edited. So you just have to do it. If you can't do it like that, I had the ability to take 10 days and do nothing but that. But everybody has some time. You can take 1 hour a day. You can take, 1 week in a month and write. But you have to make the time for yourself, and you have to not make excuses. In my case now with the children's books, I put them out. I've been putting out children's books like at least once a month the whole year, really more than that. So it's been a pretty breakneck pace. I have to dedicate myself to that. But what makes me dedicate myself to that is knowing every time I put out a book, a parent emails me and says, my child's self-esteem is higher now. My child identified with this, or my child thinks that they're this character in your book. When I see that, it makes me want to keep going because I see I'm making a difference. So keep that in mind. If you're writing a book that really needs to be written, not for ego or anything like that, just to say that you've done it, but if you're writing a story that needs to be told, it's going to affect somebody. It's going to change somebody's life, and that should motivate you to go on and do it. You never know how you're going to touch somebody else until after the fact, until it's finished, and they come back and say, wow, that really made a difference.
Absolutely. I want you to kind of touch on the importance of giving our children what you call righteous or African names. Why is it important in 2014 to give our babies names that they can look up to and live up to, in your opinion?
Oh, it's important for a lot of reasons, of course, so that they can culturally identify with themselves. But also, if you think about it, when you look back in history, when we do not have our names, it's so easy to erase our contributions. One of my brothers was telling me that one time. I think it was Jeannie, if I'm not mistaken. He was saying, you know, if you look back at some of our greats, you'd never know that they were black because of their name. If you look back and 200 years from now and see Nat Turner, you're going to possibly think he's a cracker. If nobody's there to tell you he's black, you just say, okay, he's a cracker. Even Khalid Abdul Muhammad, you may think years from now that he was an Arab. We have to be very careful about what we name ourselves and our children and be sure that it's African. There's Arabic names, too, that have an African kind of like sometimes they might not say Muhammad, they might say Mamadou, they might not say Rashid, they might say Rashidi. But we have to start looking at how we name ourselves. We definitely don't want to be a John Smith. We definitely don't want to be a George Washington. We want to make sure that any accomplishments we make are unapologetically black and that they can't be made into something else. But also it gives our children that self-esteem. It lets our children relate to themselves. There's somebody who is a supporter, and they love the Sankofa Super Heru books. They told me that they're going to name one of their children from one of these heroes in the books. They were thinking about Yah from Yah Santuwa. So, you know, having that history to be able to say this is the person you're named after, that's golden, because right now a lot of times our children have nobody to look up to. A name is everything.
Exactly. Let's talk to the lovebirds out there, because we talked earlier in the show about the importance of healthy relationships and healthy marriages. What is your advice to the black couples out there in 2014, or the black marriages out there in 2014? How do we survive in this madness?
Number one, make sure that your relationship is meant to survive, because we get into relationships so haphazardly. Sometimes we're not compatible. So if the relationship needs to dissolve, don't hold on to it. Let it dissolve and start all over again. But if you do feel like you're compatible and you do have a relationship that's worth saving,
realize that you are on the same team and cut each other a break. We can be so hard on each other. You have to realize that a lot of our issues that we have with our spouse is because of the system that we're coming up in. It's hard for a man to function as a man. It's almost impossible because we're in a system of, quote, unquote, racism, white supremacy. It's hard for a woman to be a woman because we're under assault. We have everybody telling us not to be a woman. There's the effeminization of the black man, but there's the masculinization of the black woman. So we have to really understand that, be understanding, give each other a break, and elevate each other. Stop tearing each other down. Stop looking at each other as the enemy. Black men, stop saying, well, you know, black women, blah, blah, blah. And black women, stop saying, well, you know, black men, they ain't S-H-I-T, they ain't this, they ain't that. We need to stop that, any kind of disrespect. We need to respect ourselves, and we have to respect ourselves. If we can just get that down, just basic respect and treating each other well, like normal people do, that would eliminate most of this. Most of the stuff we have is because we're acting like complete savages. We have no respect for ourselves or each other.
Exactly. And I want to be clear, too, that some of our people have the misconception that, you know, that the white man treats his white woman excellent, you know what I mean, or that being in a particular integrated relationship is better than being in an all-black relationship, and that's just not the case. I just want to be clear that the white man in particular has dogged his woman over every annal of history. You know what I mean? So don't get it twisted and think that you're getting something great just because you're with a white man or a white woman. That's crazy as hell.
Exactly. That's why feminism exists, because white men were so brutal and horrible to their women. They live in a culture of sex and violence, rape, aggression, all of that. And as far as black men, a lot of times they feel better because they're like, oh, well, you know, I have this white woman. The white man is the devil. Well, the white woman is the devil, too. And when the white man was lynching you, she was there, too, in her little dress, sitting under the tree, having a picnic, roasting your body parts. She was right there, too. She was raising her children to destroy you. So don't just think that, you know, black men are horrible and black women are some saving grace. No, they're not. They're just as bad as black men. Both are wrong. None of us should be looking outside of our race to date other people. That's ridiculous. We need to get that right. Black men for black women for black men. No homosexuality, no interracial relationships. And at some point, we have to hold each other accountable, too, and say, okay, look, it's 2014. If you go over to that side, you're not welcome here anymore. We might not be able to do that across the board, but black women, you can definitely say, oh, you just got out of a relationship with a white woman. Oh, no, sorry, bro, I can't do that. I don't know what kind of germs you're bringing back here. I'm good. And black men can do the same thing.
That's right. That's right. And let's talk about that. Let's talk about that, the watering down of stances in 2014. Now, I noticed, now, you may have noticed this too, and I don't want to put this just on him, but I noticed that when warriors like Dr. Khalid Muhammad left the scene, that the black conscious community or black, you know, freedom fighters or what have you begin to water down the stance. You don't hear as many people use the term cracker anymore. They're afraid to say the white man is the devil or the white woman is the devil. How do you think that has affected us in 2014? Do you think that is immature for us to still be saying cracker, or still say whatever we say? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
That's what they are. I think that it's just cowardice that we back away from that. We want to say, oh, well, we're going to mature. How are you going to mature? That's what they are. Maturing is to recognize that and alert everybody of that. Being immature is being too damn afraid to speak the truth when the truth needs to be spoken. So, yeah, I think that losing Khalid in a lot of ways was the death blow to the conscious community, because he was the last example of strong black manhood that we have. We still have some. We have Baba Baruti, you know, Brother Genie's doing his thing. But Khalid had such not universal acceptance. I know he had his haters, but I don't know too many people that didn't love Khalid, unless Khalid did something to, you know, some kind of discipline or something like that, something petty, and they held a grudge. But everybody loved Khalid. And we don't have that kind of person with that kind of appeal anymore who is strong and uncompromising. So that was pretty much the death blow. When we lost him, it was pretty much over as far as I'm concerned. Now, we do need to get it back. We can't use that as an excuse. But there would be no homosexual agenda being pushed successfully right now, still alive. There's no way.
Real talk. What do you think is missing in today's generation? I know we got a lot of up and coming young brothers and sisters that are striving with their warriorhood or their scholarship. What do you think is missing as we're talking on the birthday of Minister Malcolm X? What is missing in today's warriorhood, whether male or female, many of us don't seem to make the same impact as those of us before us made? What are your thoughts?
Backbone is what's missing. Backbone. I don't know why this Christianity has crept back with such a vengeance that we're afraid to say anything. We want everything to be politically correct. We always want to bend. And that's why we're not going to get anywhere. As long as we are willing to compromise, we're never going to win. You can't win by compromise. You have to take what you want. And we're not willing to do that. We're not even willing to talk big anymore. I mean, it used to be we might not act big, but we talk big at least. We won't even talk big anymore. So how are we ever going to get anything accomplished? We are becoming jokes because every time somebody says something, we want to come around and soften up the edges, make it a little fuzzy, make it a little comfortable. I get so tired of that. Sometimes I feel like as a woman, I'm willing to say whatever needs to be said. I'm waiting for the brothers to back me up, and the brothers hiding behind the stage somewhere. You know, they can't even have your back when you're trying to be strong. So that's what's missing is the backbone and the ability to say, I really don't care. I'm going to say what needs to be said. I'm not worried about impressing nobody else. I'm worried about helping my people. So if this will help them, then I'm going to say what needs to be said. Somebody has to do it.
Brothers, word to the wise, and sisters, word to the wise. Missing a backbone. Gotta go get some backbone and get some heart out here. 646-478-4447. We're talking with Sister Lady Shabazz, and I want you, sister, to just kind of run down. I know you said you lost count of the books that you have, but I know you got lessons for the Watoto book. Is that how you say it? Watoto? What is that?
Those are really good. Those are those are my least controversial children's books, I'll say. What they are African proverb picture books. And what makes them so good is because with the proverbs, you can teach a lot of lessons. You can teach character. You can teach culture. You can teach philosophy in a very understandable way. This is how we're taught in Africa. So, you know, you may have something that says shakes shed skin, but not their nature. I actually have that in a proverb book. I took that from one of my favorite rappers' songs. And that can mean a lot of things. You can use it to talk about the white man. You can use it in a lot of different situations, a lot of different scenarios to teach your child how to think, how to problem solve, how to look at the world. So those are very, very effective in that there's a lot of lessons in those books. So those came out in January, right after or right around the time of Sankofa Super Heroes. Sankofa Super Heroes is a history book, and we're working on the second edition now. And I've talked a lot about that one. I also have Colors of Africa, which is a way to teach your children colors. It's slightly militant. It talks about white people being invaders in Africa and the fact that they shouldn't be there. So it teaches color while teaching about Africa as well. I have the Conscious Book of ABCs, which is an ABC book, obviously. And then I have two books that are very popular with young girls, Nelijah's Dolls, which deals with the black beauty standard versus the white beauty standard, and also builds the child's self-esteem and teaches them family values. And then the book following that was Nelijah's Sweet Treats, which also teaches family values and teaches healthy eating at the same time. I have God's Gifts and Conscious Entertaining, which we talked about. And I have a little booklet that's very inexpensive. It's only about $5. It's called Hands Off, How to Protect Our Children from Predators. that's available on Amazon, and it just gives you a little insight into the mind of a predator, how they work, what to look for in your child, and how to keep them safe. And then in a few weeks, I have Insurrection coming out, and that deals with the Haitian Revolution as well as so-called slave revolts in the United States and how we actually freed ourselves from slavery, that white people, Abraham Lincoln, did not free us. We freed ourselves through insurrection.
And I'm looking at this Insurrection. I guess it's the cover photo that you got. You got this this Bukman. He's got this big old machete blade at the throat of this cracker. I mean, y'all have to see this. If y'all have not seen this photo and the artwork, you have to see this artwork. And I mean, Sister Sabaz, whoever, if you're doing the artwork, whoever does the artwork, they do you some real justice.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And this book, this was the one I really took the most time on because it's our story. Like, all of our books are our story, but this is really how we got free, and it had such a big impact because we were always told that we were just slaves. We had no talent. We had no value, and then some white man freed us. So I wanted to get this right, and I took a lot of time and actually went through a lot of artists. I fired a lot of people to get those pictures right. So I finally got those pictures right, and it's ready to come out. So within the next week and a half to 2 weeks, that's going to be available. And it's really, really cool. Those are both pictures from inside the book. One is Bukman Duddy, and the other one is Dethaline. And actually, those are pictures from inside the book. The cover photo is a black man with a sword in one hand. He has chains around his wrist, but he's broken the chains, and his woman is there. Holding him, and she has whip marks on her back. They've both been through a struggle together, and now they're free.
Man, it's so beautiful. What we got to do is we got to help spread the word, brothers and sisters. If you're listening, you heard all this powerful information. You have to right now spread the word. What I want you to tell people, Sister Shabazz, I want you to tell people how they can book you, how they can bring you to their city or bring you to their event or bring you to their convention. How can we bring you face-to-face live with us to be able to buy your merchandise in person and to hear you speak in person?
Sure. All you have to do is go to authorangelafreeman.com. In the top navigation, click under More, and then you'll see Book an Appearance. You can just click there and just email me directly, and we can definitely set that up. Also on that page, I really like that page because that is the page where I put pictures of my supporters when they get the books. A lot of times they'll take pictures and send me a picture in there, so you'll see a lot of the people who have bought books and a lot of the children. It's really cute. But you just go to that page and email me, and I will get back in touch with you. Not a problem at all.
And then also make sure you tell them about fundraising and giving you some money. You need some money, sister.
I've had a fundraiser going on since Sankofa Super Heroes came out. And what that is there are a lot of African-centered schools and homeschools. So I got a bunch of those together that I believe in that do not teach a watered-down message. And what I wanted to do, because a lot of my books, like Sankofa Super Heroes and Insurrection, they deal with history. They deal with things that can actually be taught in a school environment. So I wanted to be able to provide books to these schools free of charge so they would have no reason to not use them. They wanted to use them anyway, but I could give these books to them without it being an extra burden on them. So I made a call. I put out a fundraiser, and I just started getting a lot of donations. So I was very, very happy with that. It died off a little bit, but I did have enough to donate Insurrection, so that's definitely going to be donated. But I do not have enough yet for the second Sankofa Super Heroes when it comes out. So any donations that I get now are going to be going towards that, getting Sankofa Super Heroes 2 donated to some of these schools. And a lot of them are schools you may have heard of, Akabin House, Kamali Academy, Kujichagulia Academy, Liberation School. There's a lot of schools around the country that gets these books, and a few homeschools and even some daycare centers, too, for the younger children, have these books so that they don't have to take from their limited budget to buy them.
Absolutely. And I'm going to say again, brothers and sisters, y'all have to support this sister, support this sister, and support the movement. I hope very, very soon that we're able to get you on some of these, on these panels, and get you in these workshops, sister, even on a bigger basis. What I will tell you, though, is we're going to put you on a newblackpanther.org on our website, and make sure that we generate plenty of traffic to your website, and also constantly tweet your links out via Twitter, and all New Black Panthers that are listening, you all make sure that you support this sister and get this message out. And if you have children out there, and if you're a parent, or if you just need that revolutionary strong message, get the books and get all the books. I'm telling you. That's what we're going to do for you, sister. We're going to put you on our website and do our best to boost that traffic, even if we can, tenfold.
Well, I definitely appreciate that. Like I said, any help I can get, that's how it spread, is word of mouth. I don't do advertising because I don't want everybody to know about me. I want the people to know about me that need to know about me. So I appreciate that, definitely. And I do want to let everybody know, when you see my books on Amazon, first of all, they're very reasonably priced, especially compared to a lot of the independent authors. I keep my prices low so that they're affordable. But when you get the books, I think you're going to be surprised at the quality. I do not put out junk. So when you get these books, they're going to look good. The artwork's going to be good. The formatting is going to be good. You're really going to enjoy them. It's going to be a book that you can be proud of and that will build your children's self-esteem. I get tired of every time we give something to our children, it's not as good as it should be as far as quality. So any book you get from me is going to be excellent. You're really going to like it.
Exactly. Exactly. And we're right there. We've got about 8 minutes left. We have really, really enjoyed you and really, really ran this time. I mean, time has flown. Wow. But if you can, sister, give us some parting words, some words of encouragement, and repeat that information again on how we can get in touch with you and buy your products.
Sure. For everything, you can go to authorangelafreeman.com. There you'll see my books with their Amazon links. Right now, all my books are being sold through Amazon. There's also links to YouTube programs that I've done, as well as some of my old radio programs that I did when I was on War on the Horizon. Also my blog. So you can find all of that information there. Definitely contact me for bookings or anything else that you may want. Parting words would be, like I said before, give each other a break in your relationship. Don't be so hard on each other. Realize that we're both being affected by the same thing, but the root cause is the same. It's not black men against black women or black women against men. It's the cracker that has put us in this condition, and us together, we are fighting against him. Get that right and keep that in your mind. Your mate is not your enemy. Your mate is the only person that you have to depend on to overcome your enemy. And you have to teach your child who their enemy is from the cradle. No sugarcoating. You do your child a disservice. If you don't want your child to end up like Trayvon, don't be a parent like Trayvon's parents. I know that's another controversial thing we don't want to talk about. When something happens, then we want to say it's not a race issue. Yes, it is.
That's right.
You haven't prepared your child. So don't do that. Do not sugarcoat. Do not beat around the bush. Teach your child what they need to know to survive. You are in a war, and if you don't want a casualty, I suggest you prepare.
We certainly, certainly appreciate everything that you have done, everything that you're doing. We know that the God is going to bless you to be successful in your efforts, and I really look forward to what you got out and what you got coming. I'm telling you, I believe that you are just beginning. You're just starting. You're not even at the apex. You just have to start, and you've already shook up certain parts of South Africa. You know what I'm saying? So we appreciate you, and I appreciate you coming on the show. I want to tell you on behalf of our national chairman, Minister Hashim Nzinga, that anytime that you need to come on the show, anytime that you got a spot you want to say, or whatever the case is, if you want to host the show, you can host the show. We your family, and I want to let you know that, and I mean that.
Thank you. I definitely appreciate
much. Absolutely, absolutely. And we appreciate you. We're gonna go ahead and let you go, my sister. And like I said, I'll be in touch with you because I'm interested in your blogs and a lot more. So we're not gonna lose contact after the broadcast.
Yes, sir. Black power.
All right. Black power. Peace and blessings. Brothers and sisters, that has been Sister Angela Freeman, Sister Lady Shabazz, live on Black Power Radio. And, I mean, really, you don't need any more convincing than that. The sister is hard-hitting. She's uncompromising. She's unrelenting. She's unflinching with the enemy. She's just what the doctor ordered. If the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad was here on the scene, you know he'd be right there promoting some Lady Shabazz, and he'd promote everything that she do. Now, again, that website is AngelaFreeman.com. Again, that's AngelaFreeman.com / Black Books for Black Children. All right, that's in that section. That Black Books for Black Children. It's AngelaFreeman.com, and she's talking about strong families equals strong communities. We need this. We need this kind of medicine. And y'all know you're out there singing "Mary Had a Little Lamb" to your babies and talking about the three bears and Goldilocks and all this stuff that's damaging the brain. And all this stuff is on Disney and all this is damaging our babies' brains, and we need more of this to give to our youth. If they grew up knowing that they were great, and they grew up knowing that they were powerful, and they grew up knowing that they were strong, then they would have it in their DNA and in their being. So it's our duty to support our sister and to support her work and to spread this around the country. I'm going to make it my business. Our National Minister of Information going to make it her business. Our National Minister of Youth going to make it her business. You know, we're going to make it our business. National Central Committee, you got to make it your business that when a sister steps out there to put pro-black teachings in children's books and in books in general, we got to get that out there. And if y'all haven't seen the artwork that she had done or did for Dr. Khalid Muhammad, you got to see that. She got, you know that quote where Dr. Khalid say that, you know, if the cracker didn't die hard enough, you know, you dig them up out the grave and shoot in the damn grave because they didn't die hard enough. She got the artwork to that. She got Dr. Khalid Muhammad in full suit, red, black, and green, machine gun shooting down into the grave at the beast, man. I mean, hell, how can you not support that? Really, we need to, you know, get that as a sister. As if you can hear me, you need to make that a poster. That should be a poster. And those that artwork, it should become posters. And we should just make, you know, you should sell that as a poster as well. So not only do you sell the book, you know, and sell the information, but you sell you some posters and sell you some drawings. And hell, we got some people out there that's on that Emory Douglas tip from the Black Panther Party. So I'm excited, and I'm happy that our sister was on with us, and I'm happy that you all were able to listen. Now, listen, if you can help her, please go to AngelaFreeman.com. Do that right away and pick up all of her products. They're all reasonably priced, and they're all worth your time and your effort. And for those of you, join the new Black Panther Party and register with us to help us build this pro-black, black nationalist base for our people, as we have not strayed away from the principles of nationhood. We still believe in separation, a nation of our own, and doing something for ourselves. We believe in intuition, as I told you. We believe in pulling our resources as taught by the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, as taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, as taught by Carlos. We believe that in 2014. And we're living proof that it works. And for those of you with that revolutionary spirit that's willing to build for yourself, we need your help out there in the radio listening audience. You can give us a call at 347-903-0886. That's 347-903-0886. Our website is newblackpanther.org. That's newblackpanther.org. You can also get us at newblackpanther.com. We need your support there. And I just submitted some good stuff. We're upgrading the website. The website going to have all kind of good stuff on it. As you know, we have just come on the heels of our national summit, 2014 Dignity Summit, and a lot of good stuff going up on the website. And y'all can drop us a line. All the time, and we always appreciate your communication with us. You can catch us at New Black Panther, newblackpanther@gmail.com, New Black Panther, pardon me, New Black Panther Headquarters at gmail.com. Again, that's New Black Panther Headquarters at gmail.com or nbpphq@yahoo.com. If you're on Twitter, catch us at New Black Panther 1. Catch me at Sean, with a C, Sean S. Kwali, also on Facebook. That's all our information there. And again, thanks goes out to Sister Angela Lady Shabazz Freeman for all of her work, all of her sacrifice. I hope that you all are inspired, and I hope that she inspires new artists out there. We got to inspire some new artists out there to collaborate with her and help her in that effort and build a battalion of proper propaganda in that field. And so once again, happy Born Day in the memory of Minister Malcolm X. And of course, we salute him and appreciate his work and appreciate the work of those who work to keep his memory alive. And we thank you for listening with us. And I'm going to let you know in a few moments if we'll come back with our national chairman at 10:30. But y'all be on standby for the second half. Just in case, you know, y'all know how we do. This is Black Power Radio.
Yeah. Let's go win. Let's go win. Disrespect in our problems. Let's go win. Let's go win. Face the